what is the one or two things I could do today or tomorrow or this week that would be most likely to move me in the direction of that goal as aggressively as possible? And then I would recommend that you reserve time to do that or do it immediately. Most of the time, it's not all the hard work to get somebody to have a goal. It's strategic, tactical, daily actions that take bold movement and create momentum towards that goal.
Welcoming everyone to this episode of the Liberty Ventures podcast. We're still here at Richard Branson's Necker Island for the First Principle Business Summit. And I say this about every guest, I'm thrilled to have him here, but I am really thrilled to have Heath Deegers join today. Heath, for anyone who doesn't know, is just an amazing individual and executive coach who I will share was my executive coach for a while. And during that time, helped me solve some really big problems in business and in life. And I know that you just do incredible things. So Heath, I'm just so glad that you're here at the summit and that we get the chance to share some of your wisdom with the whole Liberty Ventures community.
Well, I'm really grateful to be here and thank you for having me.
Now, a lot of people might be wondering, what kind of background do you need to become an executive coach? And I'd love to start by just having you share how you ended up here, not just professionally, but personally as well.
Well, I'll give you a little bit of perspective. I think there's three main ways that people become executive coaches. One is they're in academia, they do research, they have a psychological background, and they're brought into the industry through that knowledge. The other is they're an executive, and they come in and kind of turn their executive reputation into a coaching reputation. And the third is you're completely unqualified, which is me. I basically received a bunch of executive coaching throughout my career. And then I quit my corporate job after 20 years in big tech. I worked for Booz Allen, Dell, and Hewlett Packard. And I took a year off. And I just thought and felt into what felt right. And the dream that came to me was, how cool would it be? I had very small dreams at the time, but I thought, how cool would it be if I could just serve like three or four of my heroes before I died? And I kind of resolved to only work for those types of people that were really doing something in the world that I admired and who I admired personally. And we're in the top tier of what I consider to be humanity. And I got very fortunate that got some early introductions to those people, maybe you being one of them. There were work you were doing with conscious capitalism. In fact, that I have to credit John and all the conscious capitalist founders, because I think it was conscious capitalism that actually gave me the dissatisfaction with my corporate career to leave them first place. And so the opportunity to serve you in that capacity and the opportunity to serve many other conscious capitalists, and since then has been one of the greatest joys of my life. Now, as far as how I'd say if you're completely unqualified, then what you have to do is create results, because your reputation is going to sell in coaching. And I was fortunate that one of the most important things is client selection. And I chose my clients well. If you choose the right client and you pour your heart and soul into them and they're your heroes, then I find everybody thrives and they have great outcomes that everybody notices, and it becomes a virtuous cycle that kind of builds a practice. I think a lot of people make the mistake of grasping at any client that comes along, even if it's not quite in alignment with their heart or not quite in alignment with their dharma or purpose or ethics. And I think that what happens in those situations is inevitably you don't create quite as powerful an outcome in life. And also it kind of reflects back in the coach and in your own mind. It feels like, oh, well, I poured my heart into them and this is all that I achieved. So your estimation of what you can do as a coach also goes down. So if there's any aspiring coaches out there, number one, self-coaching. That's very important. Two, sell coaching to people that are very expansive and that you admire. And three, pour your heart and soul into them to help them thrive. I think everything else takes care of itself.
So some coaches might be listening to this, but I think a lot of people listening who are going to be entrepreneurs or investors who are asking themselves, just why would someone need an executive coach? When should they get it there? And, you know, from my experience, not only working with you, but some other coaches as well, it's not only just giving advice or thinking strategically about the business. It's part therapy. It is part working on the business, and it's part helping give you perspective on everything to do. But I'm curious how you would describe what executive coaching is and when you think people should start thinking about that in business.
You know, every now and then, very rarely, I'll have a thoughtful, open-minded executive who's doing great come and be like, I could use some coaching. And those people are wonderful to work with, and I love working with them. Most executives, most founders don't have the wherewithal to seek out help until they're in some kind of trouble. And so most of the time what you see is almost all founders end up getting exited from their own company at some point. So there's a number of reinventions you have to have at each level of size and scale, complexity, and investment structure for each business. And oftentimes they'll make one, two, three, four of those, and then they'll lose track of what has to come next. And it'll inevitably get them in some kind of trouble. So most people that come to me through referral from another client, and they come to me because they've got a challenge, something that they've been working on in a personal or professional life that they've just given it everything they've got and it's not quite working. And usually we solve that really quick because those things, it's pretty obvious. And I like those engagements when they come in that way with the problem because we can prove value very quickly. And that builds the trust really down to the deep and meaningful work. And the deep and meaningful work is getting people in touch with their heart. I pretty much exclusively work with conscious capitalists, but not all of them know they're conscious capitalists when we start. So
some of them are unconscious capitalists.
Sometimes, as we said, sometimes they're unlabeled in their own mind. So, you know, but I found that no matter what industry somebody's in and no matter what kind of work they're doing, that when you get them to be still and be present themselves and you get them to look at the feedback of people around them and you have them be thoughtful about things, maybe look at a psych profile or two, they turn into really amazing people for the world. And for me personally, I'm about as far on the introverted spectrum as a person can be. and so I knew I'm never going to be a guy on a big stage or, you know, a giant public speaker. And so for me, the best way to touch the world is through these influencers. And for me, it's almost all founders. I think that founders are just the magicians of our society. They are taking ideas and turning them into reality, creating jobs for people and creating a bunch of people. And if they have a conscious capitalism bent, consciously or unconsciously, they're doing good. They're their business for many, many, many stakeholders. I have tried working lower in organizations, and I find that to be much less productive for all the stakeholders. So I really prefer to work for the founder. Like if I'd say out of every 50 clients, I probably have 47 or 48 that are founders. Every now and then I'll get a celebrity or a sports person or something like that. But my sweet spot personally is early stage and middle stage founders. And it's interesting because I have a ownership stake in Marshall Biltz's Wilder Coaches organization, and that's a very prestigious organization. So it pulls in bigger clients, bigger companies. And I find those coaches serve those people very well. For me, though, I'll take a small, struggling founder over, you know, a Fortune 100, a Fortune 10 client, because for me personally, watching them thrive is much more fulfilling than navigating some of the things that happen with the bigger company size. So if I was talking to a potential client or an executive who's looking at coaching and saying, hey, is this for me? Should I lean in this? Would it really be worth it? Answer should be a good coach should be able to sit down with you. And you guys can't come up with a value proposition that's obvious. And that's probably not, or that's not the right coach for you. Because if you're operating at a high enough level and you have enough range of impact, you should be able to offset even the most expensive coaches in the industry with massive gains that are at least a 10x, 100x, 1000x return based off the valuation of your company, your own net worth, all these other things, and then everything else is gravy. So I would say, ask yourself, how satisfied are you with your life and your business? And if you want to accelerate that growth, having someone that knows everything about you, that knows all of your challenges and all of your weaknesses, all of your strengths, still unconditionally love you, supports you, and can be a sounding board for you as you make those big decisions. If that sounds nice, then maybe give it a shot. Interestingly, most of my clients, I wouldn't count you as one of them, but most of my clients are like rugged individualists. They do not have anybody in their life like that. And I'm the first person that knows everything about them. And you could almost see their shoulders drop as that happens because they're no longer feeling like they're all alone in this chat with its struggle. And so I really enjoy that camaraderie that coach and partner.
Correct. And I know that they appreciate that too, because then even if you do have other people in your life as a founder, feel alone so often. You're in a position where you're almost necessarily alone because you're coordinating so many things, so many people rely on you. You have a lot of trusted advisors, but it's isolating. And so having someone in your corner is invaluable.
Yeah. And you're in it. Like sometimes when you're in it, it's so hard to see yourself and see what impact you're having. So, you know, it's so nice to be able to have somebody that's just working their butt off and really going to town and they're doing something to shoot themselves in the foot. And you can just say, hey, you know, you say you want these things, but I notice you're shooting yourself in the foot. Is that really what's best for you and your business? Of course not. And they'll change. But if they were alone, a lot of times they would just continue doing the behaviors that they've done in the past, even if it wasn't forward.
And one of the things that I've noticed is that oftentimes the founders or even I know what the answer is to the problem, know the solution, but it takes that outside perspective, someone else to help think through, realize making the decision to actually do what the right thing is.
That's right. That's invaluable. I know that if I'm ever the functional expert of anything a client asks me, that we're in trouble. I try to never be the solution providing, although I will call out things I don't understand. I find sometimes some just genuine stupidity and curiosity on my part saying, hey, I don't understand what you're talking about. I was just going to grade the outcomes that you want. they will get themselves to the solution all the time. Or if you don't, then we'll help them recruit functional mentors or staff that can do that for them.
Okay. So if you're willing to play for a few minutes, yeah, a game, yeah, which is basically like a practice coaching session, mm-hmm, like especially the kinds of advice that you find yourself getting into with founders a lot, how would that start?
Oh man, I gotta say, first of all, founders are such a diverse group that once you get into the engagement and you get past that first big problem, it's the wild, wild west. There's a million things we can talk about. It's one of the things I love about the practice. So it would be hard for me to think like average session. But I think what would be fun is let's talk about you. Let's actually have a 3 to 5 minute coaching session here.
All right.
So do it. So tell me, give me just in maybe 1 minute, what's going on in your life, what you're excited about, where you feel a little stuck.
So after launching Liberty Ventures last year, what I'm really excited about is how much growth that we've had and the expansion that we've had. When we started this, we had to say, because so many people have been a part of this, but I do feel like I need to be the one driving things forward, and that we're at a place now where we're doing invested. We are doing revenue operations for companies. We're helping with telework for a bit. We're starting to put events like this on, and we want to expand into so many other areas as well. And they all feed on each other in building out this ecosystem. But I also know it's important for us to stay focused and to figure out where can we deliver the most value and be relentlessly focused on that,
right,
in order to really grow at scale.
Yeah.
And this is actually something we've worked on in the past.
That's right.
Wanting to do a lot of things, but also knowing the need to be focused.
Right.
And that's one of the big things that is on my mind as we go into 2024.
Yeah. You know, if we were in a real coaching relationship, I would know your revenue and your number of employees, all the variables of your business. And if you came to me with a statement like that, I'd probably ask questions about, well, how many staff do you have and how thinly are they spread, these priorities? And then we'd probably go into something about, if you think about the outcomes that you're looking for in the next year or two, like the best you could possibly imagine, can you just paint the picture? Maybe you don't have a plan to get there. Maybe it's well beyond your goals, but like, you think of Liberty Ventures in its ultimate capacity. What do you imagine?
So I don't know the timeline for this, but I will say that my objective is for us to have supported over 1,000 startups that are run by values aligned entrepreneurs, for us to create incredible ROI for all of them, to the investors and others in the ecosystem, and build out the ecosystem to over 10,000 values aligned business leaders that we're helping build relationships for and creating new opportunities to scale their businesses, to scale their impact with each other.
So, you know, I think the thing that I would be wondering is when you look at that ultimate vision and you think about how you're operating now, what would have to change about you or your team to make that inevitable? Does anything come to mind?
There's so many changes that we need to make. There's so much, I would say there's so many things that need to evolve and grow.
But if it's still so early, imagine there's kind of a descending chart of the most important things. Like there's probably one or two things that if you implemented them aggressively, they would give you the greatest chance of that big possible, maybe plot of time or resource for the other thing that could happen. Is there anything that jumps out to be the big, heavy hitter for you?
Well, I've said this, I've been thinking about this a lot and even started to put it out there. I know that we need to expand the team, and not just expand in terms of hire more people at that, say, the associate level. Of course, we need that. But I know I personally need, and we all need, more partners who have experience in other areas that we don't have on the team that I know that I don't have right now. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, we are just about to bring on an investor relations manager that to fill the slack from me just coming up with things on my own for what to send out to the Liberty Ventures Angel Network. But there are so many more things like that at an even higher level that we need to bring on in order for us to be able to fulfill this.
Because I think, just given what I know from you in the past and what you've described today, you are a magnificent idea generator. And many of those ideas, I would love to see come to fruition, and they will come to fruition. I think the challenge is not so much whittling down what you're working on, but deciding the things that need to come first and with the greatest priority of focus of you and the staff. And oftentimes we do the things that present themselves, do the things that show up in our lives. We do the things where we get offers. But I would hope that you're taking the time to sit with yourself and have some stillness and to really think about, outside of what's being offered to me, outside of the challenges that I'm having to overcome kind of day to day, I really lean back, I look at the man that I am and the effect that I have on the people in my stakeholder groups. What is the one or two things I could do today or tomorrow or this week that would be most likely to move me in the direction of that goal as aggressively as possible? And then I would recommend that you reserve time to do that or do it daily. Most of the time, it's not all the hard work to get somebody to the kind of goal that you're talking about. It's strategic and tactical daily actions that take bold movement and create momentum towards that goal. And so I don't get to observe it as closely as I used to, but I think my guess would be that probably in all of these things you're juggling, you might be able to take more time for that reflection. And, you know, maybe 5 minutes in the morning or 10 minutes in the morning, just thinking about of all the things on my calendar, of all the things that I tactically need to respond to an email, will be the huge thing. The thing will make the biggest step, the biggest leap towards that outcome.
I am not surprised that you were able to diagnose that so quickly, because we've worked together, because you're so good at this, Heath. And also, and I know you're on point with this, because you have inspired other coaches. I have another executive coach right now that you know really well, Nate Hurt, who's been doing amazing stuff.
Nate has
helped me out.
Yeah.
And we talk about that very issue ourselves.
Yeah. Well, that's funny how we all come to the same conclusion when it's probably directionally correct.
So let me ask you, what's your vision for where you want to go over the next few years? Especially since you said you went into this wanting to help a few of your heroes out, and you've now worked with hundreds of incredible leaders.
Yeah, you know, it's really exceeded my expectations. I think I just passed 200 founders that I worked with personally, and we've supported a lot of others through referral and connection and inter-coaching relationships, collaborations. Here's the funny thing. You know, I know in capitalism, we had a speaker earlier today that was talking about, is growth really important? I have designed for my life just about the best that I could imagine. I have the best clients, my heroes that I'm getting to serve. I make commit money along with a tiny fraction of my income. My family's healthy and happy. My youngest daughter is about to head off to college. And so for me personally, it's more about creating experiences with people that I admire that are elevating to them and elevating to me. And this is an example of why I'm here at this beautiful place. And so for me, it's not about quantity. It's not really about money. Fantastically, my first year of coaching earned more than my previous 5 years of executive service at a large Fortune 10 company where I was paid very well. Because it turns out when you serve your heroes, you create massive value. You create massive, massive value. And so what I'm looking at is, I'm looking at the world with hungry eyes. I've lived in the same neighborhood for 22 years. Have walked away from my ex-wife to be a good parent to my children. And their direct needs of me are diminishing. In a year, they won't really need much at all. So I plan to go to Spain for 3 months this year to see what it feels like to live there. I think I told you I like the idea of some remote work there for a season or two. I love Southern Switzerland. And, you know, I continue to be on a scavenger hunt for people that inspire me. So if you were to do me a favor, the greatest favor you could do, and you didn't do this for me, is to watch for people that need support and help that are conscious and trying to do good things to their business. And I kind of feel like my dharma is twofold. On one hand, I can't serve all the people that come to me. I refer a lot of people away. But I know about 5,000 coaches, and I love finding their ideal client for them and introducing them. So if you were to send somebody to me, or one of your watchers were to send somebody to me, my commitment is I would hold their hand until we find a perfect person to support them. And perhaps that would be me. And if it was me, that would be the greatest gift anybody could give me. I find that's more important than anything else in my life, other than my children and my direct family and friends, is just getting to serve my hero for my life and the service to them.
You're doing a phenomenal job, Nate. And you already preempted the last question I'd like to ask everyone. I know you knew that was coming, and that's just fantastic. I hope people take you up on that. And as you said, I always will too.
Of course.
Thank you.
Of course. Anything else?
I think that was incredibly valuable. So
all right.
Let you go and get ready for the evening.
Sounds good.
Just thanks again for being here, for sharing all of this, and just be who you are.
Cheers.
Cheers.